I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a conversation with Shizwe Siegel. She is a historian, an author, a poet, and a person that creates cool events. Hi, Shizwe.
Hi, Tom. Nice to see you again. Thanks for having me. To give you a little background, I'm a third-generation Japanese-American, and I'm here right now in San Luis Obispo County, just finishing up a month down here working with the History Center of San Luis Obispo County. We've been working together for a couple of years now, preparing to do an exhibit that will be coming in spring of 2025. That's going to explore...
At the History Center?
At the History Center, which is right across the street from the Mission in downtown SLO. And it's going to explore not only my Japanese-American history, but the intersectionality with economics and with immigrants and other people of color over time. So my grandparents were immigrants that my grandfather arrived in 1907 and went to work at the Union sugar beet fields down in Bataravia. And then got to know the farmers in Guadalupe, Santa Maria area. And then he farmed just south of San Luis Obispo.
Yeah, 101 southbound. And you come back out to the Pacific Ocean. There's a housing development. And that was your grandfather's farm, right?
Right. That was the farm that he was able to start leasing in 1917. Mm-hmm. And my family held it until 1942 when they lost the lease and they were incarcerated.
And they also, your family owned retail stores in Japantown, right?
Right.
The South Higuera.
Right. Just at the edge of town, opposite the what used to be the railroad depot. And they own the storefronts right at South and South Higuera, storefronts and a hotel. And my mother had just turned 21 and the property had just been turned over to her. And we have documents that show that she signed it over to a white realtor from Poston, Arizona, which was where she and her family had been incarcerated.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah. And it was pennies on the dollars they got.
Yeah, they got $2,000 for a property that they had invested well over $50,000 into and built a hotel and so forth. It's like the whole layered history of that is really interesting because I found out from local military historian Eric Brune that the artillery unit that guarded the coast from Monterey down to Point Sal was a segregated all-black unit.
54th Artillery Regiment.
Right, yeah. Right. I really admire historians like Eric Brune and James Papp that have all the data and the detail down. For the historical record, that's really important. But I myself, I like to do visual art and I like to do poetry as well. So in sort of preparing for this exhibit that's coming up at the History Center, I've been looking around and noticing that a lot of people right now are not reading books and they are not particularly interested in history. So it's like, how do we tell the stories in different ways that will draw people? Mm-hmm. So we just finished up a series of two film screenings and a reading and writing workshop that gave people the opportunity for them to explore and share their stories, because I love that two-way dialogue. Mm-hmm. And then an exhibit at the San Luis Obispo County Library, the main branch, which is right across the street from City Hall in downtown SLO. And that exhibit includes a diverse group of artists and poets. And that'll be up for 2 months, and then it's moving to Camp San Luis Obispo, which is not going to be open to the public, but it'll be open to the folks that work in the National Guard there. And then hopefully it's going down to Hancock College in the fall. And I'm exploring other venues for it. It's a display of 24 images by about 6 different artists that include Peruvian-American artist and filmmaker Susana Aragon, African-American sculptor Lorraine Bonner, Chicano printmaker and educator Juan R. Fuentes, Chilean-American street artist Pancho Pescador, working with Peruvian-American poet José Antonio Galloso, and then myself, I'm a poet and an artist, among other things. So all of these writers and poets, artists, are from the Bay Area, and I've worked with many of them for a number of years.
You have a writer's group based in San Francisco, right?
Yeah, I do. And we're sort of broadening that because it's a virtual writing group, and it meets twice a month. You can find out more information on my website, writenowsf.com. That's WRITENOW, SF as in San Francisco, .com. And I have information about the monthly writing groups and about a couple of calls for submissions that I have out right now. One of the things I like to do is support reality-based writing by diverse people of color. Mm-hmm. And I like to combine visual art with the writing. I think a lot of times they support each other really well. And a lot of times, art by people of color can be sort of derived from their personal and family histories and can have pretty powerful perspectives on cultural identity, on civil liberties, on economics, and many, many other things. It's not just art to be pretty or to entertain or to get famous. Much of the work is very, very deep because there are so many hidden stories that people haven't had the opportunity to tell. Through Right Now for the last 8 years, I've worked really hard to try to support writers and artists of color and a full range of people, from people going, oh, but I'm not really a writer, I don't really have stories to tell, nobody's going to be interested, all the way up to award-winning published writers, several poets laureate in the Bay Area, wow. Etc. As a matter of fact, San Francisco's poet laureate emerita Kim Shuck is in the Food for Thought show. Mm-hmm. She is part Cherokee and part Polish heritage, and she does amazing beadwork and amazing poetry.
Dig a little deeper for a moment on the upcoming Food for Thought.
Food for Thought is the umbrella for mm-hmm. this whole series, but we had on view at the library, and hopefully it's going to be floating around SLO County and then in Santa Maria for the next year, I hope. For instance, African-American sculptor Lorraine Bonner is a retired physician, and she did not really start working on sculpture until she retired. She started working in clay, and in particular, black and white clay. And as she worked, she began to uncover some really deeply buried traumatic stuff from her childhood. Her work is deeply intuitive and really powerful. Like, I love this piece of, it's the head of a person in black clay, and the top of the head has been cut off, so you're looking down into the what would be the brain case, and there are these fingers pointing inward in white clay. And you know, you look at that and go, oh my God,
yeah.
I've got those accusing fingers. The title of the piece is Internalized Perpetration.
And where is she based?
She's based in Oakland. And here's the poem she wrote about it. You know those voices, those fingers pointing in your head? They slow you down, don't they? Make you want to turn around. They even say, I love you, as your spirit withers. It's for your own good. Here's what you do. Take those wicked fingers, wrap them in yesterday's news. If you can't find newspaper, put them in an Amazon box. If you can't find a box, wrap them in a greasy fast food wrapper and throw them, the bad word, away.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Hang on one sec. So moving on.
There are several pieces in this show, and she will also be featured in another exhibit coming up in Pacifica in a few months at the Sanchez Art Center. But she does amazingly powerful work. Mm-hmm. And then Pancho Pescador, Oh my God, this guy is amazing. He's Chilean. He was trained in Chile, moved here when he was 20. And by that time, he'd already had excellent training in Chile and had gotten lots of support from his teachers. So he had a strong sense of confidence about his work, had a strong sense of his identity. And I find that a lot of times immigrant artists, they come with that because they weren't born into the oppression, the sort of unspoken racial and cultural negativity that can come at people of color growing up in the U.S. And a lot of times it's completely unconscious, mm-hmm. you know, and we can grow up thinking, oh, our work isn't worth anything. Nobody's interested in our stories because people are still operating off of that dominant sort of Northern European oriented thinking that thinks that they're the only civilized culture and that the Irish, the Italians, the Eastern Europeans, the Jews, and any person that is, you know, red, yellow, brown, or black, their culture, their perspectives are not worth listening to. They are there to be killed and exploited. Wow. So there's a certain kind of thinking that still exists. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times we don't realize how much we still owe to that kind of thinking to the British monarchy and to the monarchies of France and Germany and just the sort of jockeying that used to go on. So many of us are carrying around centuries, generations of oppressions. And then others are, immigrants as well. It's like the Japanese and the Chinese and the Indians. They're carrying around centuries of oppression from the ruling dynasties in their countries. So there's just so much to think about in terms of where are we coming from? What material are we carrying? What material have our parents and grandparents passed on to us about how we view ourselves and each other? So I just love doing this work, and I love all of the writers and artists I get a chance to work with.
It's really interesting because what you're talking about is post-colonialism.
Yeah.
And yet that colonial thinking is still operative.
Absolutely.
Yeah, fascinating.
Absolutely. You know, we went through a period, too, of reclaiming cultural identity, which is really important and really powerful, but sort of got divided into separate pots of, you know, Latino culture, indigenous culture, Chinese, Japanese, Filipino, Mexican, but there's so much diversity within each one of those and so much intersectionality. Mm-hmm. And I think especially for younger people nowadays, there are more and more cross-cultural relationships, friendships, etc. You know, I used to think, for instance, monolithically about Native American people. And I would talk to a Diné Navajo person, then find out that his mother was Diné, but his father was Shoshone or Paiute. And it's the same thing in China. You were sort of not supposed to marry somebody from your own village. You were supposed to outmarry. So there are all of these things that bring in a diversity of experience. It's easy also to sort of look at a group and say, oh, okay, they're Chicano, they must all be poor. No. There are well-to-do, successful, accomplished people in every ethnicity and culture. They just may not get the recognition. There are some cultures that get raised really early. Be the first to raise up your hand. You want to be famous. You want to be well-known. You want to make a lot of money. And then there are other people that are raised to think family first, community first, you know, let someone else have the spotlight, support each other. It's about being in this together. And for me personally, I identify with that second way of being. And I think it's what we need right now because
but that's kind of how you were raised.
That's how I was raised. Yeah. And a lot of other people. I mean, when I see an older Campesino, an older Mexican man, whether in Mexico or here. I just get this feeling. He reminds me of my own grandfather, and I give a slight bow of respect.
Yeah.
And you know what? They're really pleased to see that, and nod back.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah. And a lot of times it starts a dialogue going.
Talk for a moment. In your writers group, you promote BIPOC. Talk to us about that acronym.
BIPOC stands for Black, Brown, Indigenous, and People of Color. It speaks to the intersectionality, the relationship, so that instead of saying non-white, we're including all the various non-European shades of being. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an odd-sounding acronym, but for the lack of something better. I personally don't like to use the word white particularly because that's sort of labeling in the same way.
Exactly. Well, it's like brown or black. I mean, what a rainbow that is.
Right. And one of the things that was interesting was I pulled together this library show relatively quickly, and I reached out to some Chicano and Mexican artists that didn't have the time to participate. But I was lucky to get Chicano printmaker Juan Fuentes, who also, we showed a 30-minute documentary about him called Strawberry Pickers, which we'd like to show again. Hopefully we'll have more opportunities to show that at some of the community colleges. But Juan has a wonderful story. He grew up in the farm labor camps around Watsonville. His parents were American-born in Arizona, just on the U.S. side of the border. But in those days, when his parents were young, there was no wall, and crossing the border was no big deal.
People did it every day.
Yeah, right. They'd people go visit their auntie or their grandmother. Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of people worked cross border.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, or went to school across the border. Mm-hmm. But then his parents moved to California. They were in Fresno for a while, and he said he's glad he didn't stay in the valley. They moved up to Watsonville, and he just loved the coastal climate up here. I heard somebody, another writer, say, oh, I'm a costeño. Yeah, I'm a coastal person. Because there is something about that.
Very distinct, yeah.
And I'm pulled to it, too, which is, I mean, when I come down to Los Osos, I feel like I'm home. And in San Francisco, I live within a mile of the ocean. Mm-hmm. It's still that same air.
Yeah, and the fog.
Yeah. And then I have a relationship with the folks in Pacifica at the San Jose Arts Center. And again, the people that live there, a little bit like Los Osos people, they like the fog. The thing that's interesting about Pancho Pescador is that he came to the U.S. and he saw the racism and the classism. And he met a bunch of folks that were doing graffiti art on the street and got involved with that. He's a very sophisticated painter. I mean, he's a brilliant painter. So much detail in his work. And he also brought with him Chilean culture and indigenous culture and that feel for magic realism. So oftentimes his characters will be animals dressed in human clothing, and he'll use indigenous symbols, and he'll incorporate lots of natural elements, vegetation and animals. His work is just stunning and complex. And he's been working with a Peruvian poet named Jose Antonio Galloso. And we have the work in Spanish and in English at the library. So there's this image here of a tiger mother sitting on her knees and cradling her child, her sleeping child. And around there's corn, there's various animals, there's mushrooms. There are some symbols of American. There's a sort of a distorted Snoopy, for instance, in the corner, and like Halloween ghosts and indigenous imagery. This is part of a multi-part series that they're doing together, Jose and Pancho are doing together. And this is part one of Jose's poem. Every morning we sit in the middle of the crops, around the small eye of water through which the future can be seen. The planet is the archipelago of oblivion. Those who remain, not a human among them, are we drifting or trapped in small fragments of Earth?
Wow, powerful. So to learn more about your world and the events and things upcoming in the near term, where would you direct us?
Go to my website right now, sf.com. Mm-hmm. That's WRITENOWSF.com. And there are tons of pages there, so you can look up events, submissions, workshops, whatever. Also, another way to follow our events is to follow Right Now SF Bay on Eventbrite. And if you follow us, you'll get a notification every time we put an event online. Mm-hmm. Our events are free. It's really nice to get registration so that we know how many chairs to put out for an event. Yeah. And also so that we can show the funders how many people we draw. The series of four events that we just completed here in San Luis Obispo County, the four events drew 100 people, and the library exhibit will be up for two more months. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it happened to be a rainy day last Saturday, and we had 100 people.
Oh, wow.
Come to the strawberry pickers.
Excellent. And Sunday you had something too, right?
Sunday we had a writing workshop, and there were 12 people who showed up. But that's a good number for a writing workshop because it allowed us to get really intimate.
Exactly. Manageable too.
Right. And then everybody who came wrote. We had readings followed by writing prompts, you know, ideas about what to write about. Mm-hmm. And then we had like 10-minute sections where people could just take the time and write. And then we had the opportunity for everyone to share. And that was so moving. Some people dug really deep. And it was really lovely. It also, there was a mix of people of color and white folks, and we were able to really see the commonalities across culture and across race. My name is Shizue Siegel.
And I'm Tom Wilmer.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station.
I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
World Bicycle Relief partners with communities to deliver specially designed, locally assembled rugged bicycles for people in need. Nearly 1 billion people in rural regions of the world live in communities far from the nearest paved road, walking miles every day just to survive. Distance is a barrier to attending school, receiving health care, delivering goods to market, and other critical services needed to thrive. Find out how you can help deliver rugged, dependable, life-changing bicycles to deserving communities. Log on to worldbicyclerelief.org to learn more.